Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm here today with Mark Holton, all the way from Australia. Mark, good day to you.
Good day, Rob. How are you?
We're fantastic. And for the benefit of people listening, Mark, that may not have come across you, just tell us a little bit about how fantastic you are, because I know that, but tell us a bit about your background and your expertise.
Oh, absolutely, Rob. Thank you for that. Look, my name is Mark Holton. I'm a fellow of the Certified Practice Accountants of Australia, and I've been in the accounting and tax game for the best part of 35 years. One of my businesses is Dynamic Taxation and Training Services, and the other one is Smith Inc. And what we do at Smith Inc. is we run events for accounting firms. We do events like technology shows, business advisory conferences, events for young guns in accounting firms, practice managers and the like. And when I'm not doing that, I'm generally these days working with accounting firms across Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom and also Canada on how to implement more business advisory type services into their firms, how to create more diversified income streams, and I suppose how to future-proof their firm against any possible technology issues, automation issues, government intervention issues, and get out there and do the sort of things that clients really want from us.
Mark, from what you see across the world, and you have a truly global perspective, what kind of state is the accounting profession in right now?
Oh, look, I think it's a wonderful profession, Rob. I think it's a profession that's over a long period of time provided a service to clients that the clients simply couldn't do themselves. Yeah. And we all call that the compliance type service. I think it's an industry that's looking to change. It's looking to innovate. I think it's looking to add significant advantages through collaboration of data and new technologies. And certainly in the space that I spend a lot of my time in, I'm finding more and more interest across the industry around the world in how do I do get this business advisory stream happening in my firm,
yeah.
You know, and not just to do it spasmodically or, you know, what I call reasonably reactively, but how do I make it part of the fabric of my accounting firm, valuable to clients and also lucrative to me?
The sands are shifting, aren't they, Mark? You hint at a time where compliance was all accountants did and it was necessary, but the world's changing, isn't it?
I think it is, Robin. I think it has been for a while. I can honestly talk about my experience. I moved into this space almost 20 years ago, and I did it through absolute frustration, to be honest. I was a bit frustrated with the compliance model. I was frustrated with clients challenging us on price and not seeing the value in what we did. But then again, I shouldn't have been that frustrated because they kept coming back every year. But I was looking for more. I was looking to try to help my clients grow their business smart. You know, how to improve their profitability, how to strengthen their cash flow, and I think more importantly, how to make their business worth more tomorrow than it's worth today. And what I found through that journey was it also then offered an immense amount of opportunities to be able to go out there and do a variety of different things to help my clients and diversify my income streams to levels I really never thought possible.
Yeah. Mark, you deal with firms of all sizes. Do you see any difference in the big firms over the small firms?
I found at times some of the bigger firms are a little bit more difficult to engage down this advisory pathway because decisions are basically made through committee. In my mind, every firm can do this, don't get me wrong.
Right.
You know, and that's big firms, small firms, sole practitioners. The one thing they've got to have is they've got to have a commitment to do it and they've got to have capacity. And without that, it doesn't matter what firm it is, it ain't going to work. I think the sweet spot from what I've seen is probably the 2 to 4 partner firms. Simply because those guys generally can make a decision and move down a certain pathway and resource and commit to it with a little bit more simplicity than some of the bigger firms.
Yeah.
But then the bigger firms are the ones with the resources, you know, and the infrastructure to be able to do this thing probably better than some of the smaller. So,
what structure should an accounting firm adopt when implementing advisory services? It is about the culture, the infrastructure, isn't it, as much as anything?
In my mind, Rob, the structure is the most critical thing.
Right.
We are the most trusted advisor. You know, multiple surveys over multiple years have shown that.
What is trusted advisor, Mark? Just give us your definition of it.
My definition of it is, Rob, is that when the client has an issue, they come to us. We have to build what I call a family and business model, okay, or the trusted advisor model. When a client has an issue, be it to do with their business or be it to do with any of their personal finance and or other issues We are the central point of entry.
Got it.
The client comes to us. We analyze their issues. We unlock their needs, as I like to call it. And then we make a decision whether we internalize or externalize that service offering. But at all times, we project manage it. The structure we've got to get is that we, as the most trusted advisor, operating under a family and business model, whether we do it internally in our firm or externally through strategic alliances, we can't abdicate the responsibility. We project manage it. One of my greatest concerns in the industry is if a client needs something, let's say they need a revision of a will or an estate plan as such.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of great lawyers, solicitors who could do that, but I'm not going to pass the client over to them and wash my hands. I'm going to sit down with the solicitor, with the client. I'm going to work through the issues. I'm going to record the actions coming out of that meeting in my CRM system. Otherwise, I can't keep track of things and things slip through the cracks. But I'm going to adopt what the role is. I'm going to adopt the most trusted advisor role, the family and business role. And that structural step, believe me, creates engagement with clients and what I like to call moves the firm more from compliance into reliance space.
Okay. What are the key elements of the right structure in a firm to take on more advisory work?
Oh, well, I call this infrastructure, Rob. We've got to work out who's going to do what, when, how. We've got to work out what are we selling? How will we communicate that to a client in a beneficial manner? Because my experience is that if you don't do that, they don't buy. How are you going to price it? How are you going to package it? In other words, infrastructure-wise, we've got to look at getting the right system, the right processes, and the right people on the bus.
Yeah.
And if you don't get those in that, not in that order, but those three things wrapped up together, it's near impossible to go out there and start to implement a service offering that has no checks, balances, measures. I'm also a bit of a big believer that in our industry, where we're very good at systems, processes, structures, checklists, and quality assurance with the compliance model.
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult just to say to an accountant, go and have a conversation with a client with no structure, process, quality assurance, or checklists. So we've got to build the right infrastructure as part of the right model in the firm to give these guys the confidence to go out there and have a conversation with a client,
yeah,
unlock their needs, work them through a whole host of issues, and then come back and engage further to move through to a delivery model.
How challenging do you find this for accountants, Mark? Do you see them as quite coachable? Because they're very technically strong, aren't they? But could be accused of not having the social interpersonal communication skills they probably need for this?
You've got to find the right guys in here who are storytellers. I've always believed myself to be a storyteller and who love engaging with clients and get a buzz doing it, and love taking the clients on a journey, you know, and love communicating with them. The issue with advisory is it's not like compliance. It's not taking history and then sitting down and telling the client where they were 6 months ago. It's not looking backwards, it's looking forward. And because you have to look forward, you've got to unlock their needs. You've got to get inside the client's mind.
Mm.
So it takes a certain person to do that, and it's not something we do naturally. You know, I've often heard many accountants say to me, I'm not good at selling. Well, that's because we haven't had to. We've got government departments that do that well for us.
Mm.
You know, at the end of the day, it's got to be someone who wants to do this. And that's what I mean by getting the right people on the bus.
So in your opinion, it's not everyone's job to deliver advisory?
No, it's not. You know, it's in my opinion, and with some of the practices I've seen that have had great success, it's really been set up as a separate division in their business, Rob.
Whose job is business development in a firm and growing the firm? Is that everyone's job?
I think it is everybody's job, Rob. It might not be actually delivering the services, but the rest of the team need to know what we do.
Yeah.
They need to know what it is, and they need to be trained to a certain extent to be able to diagnose some of the leads that come out of clients.
Yeah.
And then obviously who to refer those leads to within the firm. I think it's every person's job in the firm to promote the services we offer. And part of that does come back to initial training. In fact, to be honest with you, with advisory, it's not initial training, it's ongoing training that's critical.
The fund of a client engagement model that you describe and go through with clients. Tell us a little bit about that, Mark.
Well, one of the things I always do, Rob, is that we're going to have a client engagement model. It's going to be like a client onboarding model when it comes to compliance, and that is that everyone goes through it. The first thing you can't do is you can't have some clients going through the engagement model and not others. The first thing I do is that I find out what's important to the client. I use a tool that actually is called a WITY, W-I-T-Y, which stands for What's Important to You, to understand at worst their top three non-financial issues in their business. I also use a tool that allows me to diagnose where their major financial strength, weakness, and consequences. And then from there, I develop five simple entree questions designed to get the client to talk. And then once we go through that engagement model, by doing what I call a needs analysis, we then can understand the client's needs, their issues, their requirements, their problems. The challenge is listening to what you answer and then building on those questions to try to get inside your head and work out exactly what you need, what concerns you in your business or your personal life. See, if I don't delve into that area, then how do I then put a customized, individualized proposal in front of you within 7 days of this meeting?
So you're talking here, Mark, about before they become a client. Let's say they switch from another firm. You're at that consultation or pitch to work with them. So you're doing all of this beforehand. So then you can put something in front of them to say, this is what we're going to do for you.
And right? Rob, by doing that, it differentiates my firm from the rest. It's my unique selling proposition. Right. I'll show you the financial impact of every key decision you want to make before you make them. Ooh. And that's a mantra I've lived by all my career. You know, that's what got me involved in advisory 20 years ago. That's how it was promoted to me.
Give us an example of the storytelling that you talk about, Mark. It is really important, creating some kind of narrative and making it come alive.
That's a great question, Rob. One of the key things that I have to do is to be able to understand what are my major strengths, what are my major weaknesses, what are my green flags and what are my red flags. And then from there, how do I take the green ones, enhance them, develop them and keep them as a strength? And how do I take the red ones and find it, fix it and fix it fast to hopefully turn it from a strength, from a weakness to a strength? I think in essence, sometimes we make finance too complicated for our small business clients. All I want them to do is to understand if something's green, that's good. If something red, it's not. What are we going to do to fix it? Or just have a discussion. Or heaven forbid, you could use Excel if you wanted to, okay, which I call the accountant's love tool. We don't need to be able to use sophisticated structures here. It's a simple engagement model at this particular point in time. Yeah. When it comes to telling a story, the story is quite simple. Your sales have gone up. And by $200,000, let's say, the problem is that your receivables, your debtors, have gone up by almost $198,000. So you're overselling, you're under-collecting, and the consequence of that is your overdraft has gone from $500,000 to $900,000 to $1.3 million. You're overselling, under-collecting, and using expensive short-term debt measures to run your business. That ain't sustainable. We have to do something to reverse that trend. And let them do little things. You know, one step at a time. And then when they do well, celebrate success and then move to the next one.
Mark, what does value pricing mean in the Mark Holton Dictionary of Life and Business? Because a lot of this comes down to pricing, doesn't it?
It does, Rob. And I've heard many people talk about this over the last 20-odd years. I listen and I look for experts and gurus like everybody else does. I'll give you an example. Without names or pack drills, I did a two-day event for one of the major accounting bodies in a different country than Australia, let's say that. And as we went through it and we built up the confidence, a lot of people were saying, I'm not sure my client will pay. And my response to them is, how do you know? I'm not sure my client would like this. How do you know? I'm not sure how to bill it. Well, in my mind, value billing isn't determined by us, it's determined by the client. If I'm sitting down with Rob and I'm saying to them, do you have an action plan? And Rob says, what's that? And I said, a plan, month by month, how much you're going to sell, how you're going to manage your costs, and what your take-home pay is each month that we can measure to ensure you create success. You know, in other words, do you have a budget or cash flow? When it comes to that, and I say to them, what, you don't have a budget or cash flow, do you think you need one? If that person sitting in front of me doesn't squirm in their seat, they're not talking about price. If they don't turn around to me and say, yeah, but how much does that cost? They're not as price sensitive as we think. You know, the same value price mechanisms are the same things that makes us want to stay in better hotels and go to better restaurants and go on wonderful holidays.
Yeah.
You know, we worry too much in this game about pricing. What it comes back to is your ability to engage a client the ability to analyze what their issues are and deliver it. And the ability to get a client to believe, which is often the truth, they don't have to believe it, they can't do it themselves. Because if they do it themselves, then surely they would have, wouldn't they?
Mark, how important are the systems and the processes and let's say the software? You've got to get the right applications into your client, don't you, to get advisory started?
Oh, look, Rob, I think there's two issues there. Systems, processes are one thing. Without the systems and processes inherently in place and the capacity issue addressed and the commitment issue that we're going to put resources to this and get the right people involved with it, there isn't not one bit of software out there that's going to make you money. You know, we've got to look for smart software systems to help us get our processes and structures in place, first of all. And then we need to look at smart software systems and that they represent to me an aid to deliver. If I haven't got the capacity issues addressed, I don't have the right systems, processes, I don't have the right people, everything inside me says there's not much point investing in a lot of the very sophisticated and very, very good software applications out there because you're simply not going to make money. So my model is quite simple. Let's get the software around systems and processes right, and then let's get out there and get a few runs on the board with clients, and then let's look then at the future and the brilliant software applications out there that can help us engage, develop and enhance our clients' businesses.
Loving this, Mark. What are some of the big reasons why firms fail to implement advisory services?
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob. I actually did a webinar on this just recently. I do a lot of studies as to why, because I hear an awful lot of people fail to implement, and I know that. I call them FTIs. Number one reason is time. Everyone I talk to, and I've spoken to many, they tell me I don't have time, which sort of belies the fact of why did I go out there and invest in software, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If a client come into us and said, look, I want to launch a new business, but I really don't have time, we're not going to say to them, off you go, have fun and pat them on the head. We're going to start to get the structure in place first. The other reason is lack of confidence, lack of a proven implementation system, which is what I do with firms. I build those systems off all my successes and hopefully not that many failures. But I've been building that stuff for 20 years. I know what's required. The other thing, and one of the biggest reasons I think, Rob, is desire to move from the comfort zone. You know, compliance for firms are comfortable. You know, it's become more comfortable with cloud-based technologies and collaboration of data. It's not like we're engaging clients that much through compliance. We're taking historical data and we're telling them where they are. This coming into this model does take a bit of a leap of faith. I think one of the other issues is we don't have a champion in the firm, and you need a champion. We need a partner to drive this, but you need a champion to deliver it and also do the legwork that's necessary at the right level on a scalable pay base with clients as well. But I think if I could wrap all those up, and another one I believe too is sometimes we pick the wrong client to start with, so client selection is critical. If I could wrap all those up, Rob, I'd put it back to the firm needs to have a business advisory implementation plan. No plan, no structure, no accountability is no success. So what are the main reasons firms fail? They don't sit down today and work out where they want to be tomorrow and then put actions in place and accountabilities and responsibilities to make that happen. They often don't separate advisory services in their profit and loss, which means no separation or reporting, no KPIs, no budgets, no accountability. We've got to get the plan right. I'm very, very good at holding accounting firms to plans.
What do you love most about what you do, Mark? Because there's a lot of passion in your voice.
Oh, look, I love it, Rob. I love presenting to accounting firms and other organisations around this particular topic. I really do. And I love working with accounting firms, getting in there, getting the hands dirty and seeing some of their successes. But as one of them said to me the other day, I'll tell you this little story, Rob. He said, we've sat there and we planned and we procrastinated. I think we just need to have a crack. And that resonated with me because at some stage, at some point in time, how will you ever know if you can do it or not if you don't go out and have a go?
A mentor of mine once said, you can't aim a duck to death. Sooner or later, you got to pull the trigger.
The other bit of confidence I could give to listeners today is, how does the client know you've done it wrong? I mean, are you going to tell them you've made a mistake or you've done it wrong? How do they know? If I work with a firm and we do a needs analysis and we put five questions in place, if you don't get time to ask them four or five, who knows apart from you? And that's because you've had great engagement with one, two or three. It's not like it's a risky thing. It's just getting out there and doing what we were trained to do and we do well. And I think in some respects, we've forgotten.
So what frustrates you most about the profession or your job, Mark?
Oh, look, I love my job, Robert. What frustrates me? Firms that won't commit, firms that make up lame excuses for what ultimately they know where the real problem is. I think that's probably the main thing, to be honest. You know, firms that I know could do this very well, but they want to make up excuses as to why they can't. And my model's pretty simple too, Rob. I'm not talking about going out there and doing this with thousands. Let's just find three clients and practice on them. Just three. You know, better still, let's just find one.
If people want to get started, if they want to make the leap, as it were, you don't see it as a leap. I'm gathering from you it's small steps. So what could they just start doing?
Oh, look, I think they need to sit down and work out a plan for starters. They've got to sit down and look at how they currently earn income and how they want to earn income in the future. They've got to break down their service offering. See, many firms tell me they do tax planning. Now, tax planning is an advisory service. It's not a compliance service. A compliance service is something they're forced to and they're regulated to make sure it's done. Tax planning's not it, but so many firms wrap tax planning up with a compliance model. So many firms wrap advisory up with a compliance model. And that's why they charge too little. That's why the client doesn't value it enough. You can't launch a new service with the same mindset. You know, we've got to sit down today and say, okay, my income is coming out of 80% compliance, 20% maybe, you know, financial planning or some other sort of what I call piecemeal advisory, like doing a budget for a client so they can get a loan at the bank and then doing nothing with it. You know, what I like doing is I like building annuity models for advisory because compliance is the greatest annuity model in the world. We've got to look for the annuity model with advisory and then we've got to look at creating a scalable version of it so then you can put multiple clients through it. And resource-wise, you'll have that under control because you'll have the infrastructure right.
What do you mean by annuity there, Mark?
Oh, look, something that happens over and over again. My greatest annuity model with advisory is doing board of advice meetings. You know, you being the external chairperson to your client.
Yeah.
Meeting with them quarterly, face-to-face, following up with monthly teleconferences or webinars or the like, creating accountability. Building a model to do these quarterly meetings that every client goes through, okay, because it's systematic, it's process-driven.
Mark, there's so much more I want to ask you, but we'll have to get you on another time. Get your crystal ball out, my friend, and tell us what's coming up for accountants over the next few years.
What a good question, Rob. I think those firms that shy away from the advisory or the what I call the non-compliance services, because that's what advisory is, are putting themselves in a position of peril in the future. By peril, I mean other firms that are doing it could very well strip them of quality clientele that they flat blank don't want to lose. I think we're going to see more advances with technology and automation. In fact, I have absolutely no doubt about that. I think we're going to see things like online real-time budgeting and benchmarking tools hit the market. I think we're going to see an explosion in machine-based learning and blockchain technologies and the impact of that on the compliance model and the banking model. The one thing about our industry, Rob, is it's never dull. There's always something happening.
Yeah.
I just think technology, we're at the point in time, we're at the precipice of technological advancement, change, collaboration of data. But more importantly, I think we owe it to our clients to be offering them more than compliance. Yeah. And I think we've got to start to think about future-proofing our practice.
And is it fair to say, Mark, that we in the UK are a little bit behind you guys in Australia?
In some respects, yes. In other respects, no. I mean, firms here seem to be probably early adopters of technology when it comes to advisory.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're making money with it.
Right.
You know, I judge success in advisory of how much you're billing. You know, and how regularly you're billing it to a client. In fact, I think one of the success models is if you're charging a client, say, £5,000 or dollars, or $3,000 or $2,000, to get advisory happening with that guy, you've got to double their fee in the first 12 months. I think a lot of firms have the goal, but they don't follow through well enough. Yeah, in some respects, it's probably a little bit further in front of where the UK market is at the moment, but then I think you guys are more in front of us when it comes to digital representation of data with government authorities too.
Good old MTD. Mark, this has been world class. If people are loving what they hear and want to find out more about you and what you do, how might they reach you?
They'll get me on my website, Rob, which is www.smithinc.com. That's smithink.com. Or really, they can email me at mark.holton, H-O-L-T-O-N, at smithinc.com. Anyone that needs to ask any questions or wants to talk about their firm and how they get advisory going, I'll happily have a chat with anyone.
And you can work remotely, can't you? So firms in the UK and the US could pick this up and work with you?
A large amount of the work I do is remotely in Australia, Rob, because it's such a big place.
Sure.
You know, firms on the other side of the country or up north, I do a lot of work with them online, a lot of work. You know, and firms in New Zealand, I do a lot of work online as well.
Yeah.
I think the tyranny of distance is not an issue now with technology.
No, fantastic. And Mark, leave us with one piece of advice, one call to arms for the accounting profession. How can they start dipping their toes into advisory and make some of this stuff count?
Guys, if you are looking to move into advisory and future-proof your firm, I would sit down and I would work with either your team or get a consultant in, talk to me if you wish, and I would nut out a business advisory implementation plan. I would look at how I'm currently earning income. I would look at how I want to earn it in the future, and I would start to put the framework in place to be able to get the right systems, processes, and people there in place to deliver the type of services that we all know clients want. Just have a go and make a start.
Well, Mark Holton, that's been superb. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's indeed my pleasure, Rob, and thank you for people listening.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.